Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sistrix with Kanda. I am Jack Chambers Ward, I am one of your hosts, and I am joined by Mark Williams-Cook.
Hello.
Hello Mark, how are you?
Very well, Jack. And what about yourself? Nobody ever asks Jack.
They do sometimes. Some of the guests on the podcast do. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you asking. I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about some topics this week. We're going to be diving into the fallout from the multitude of Google updates in October 2023. Thanks to the wonderful people over at Sistrix. We've got a lot of data to talk about. We're going to talk about LinkedIn AI-generated ads. We're going to talk about Bert versus Ernie. And we're also going to be talking all about the possibility of Google Discover coming to your desktop very, very soon. Shall we dive straight into some Sistrix data, Mark?
There's a lot to get into today.
There is a lot to talk about. The fantastic people over at Sistrix, first of all, thanks for having us over on your YouTube channel. If you haven't already, please do like, subscribe, all the usual stuff. And you can, of course, find the audio version of this episode on the Search with Kanda podcast channel as well. Let's check out some Sistrix updates, shall we? Let's have a look at the Google Core update and spam update because they overlapped because Google just wants to make everyone's life more painful. And of course, the fantastic Steve Payne over at Sistrix has dived into the data and gotten some really interesting conclusions from us. Lots of winners, lots of losers, and we'll talk about it in a sec. But yeah, so the rollout for both of these has concluded, thankfully. Completed the spam update on the 20th and the core update finished rolling out on the 19th. So by the time you're hearing this, be about a week or so pretty much until they're all done and sorted. And that means it gives the Sistrix team some time to dive around and have a look at what has been affected the most in terms of the SERPs and particular sites that are ranking and all that kind of stuff. Let's have a look at the absolute winners here. Surprise, surprise, YouTube is top of the pile. Because of course it is.
I mean, it's hard not to have a little bit of incredulity when you see results like this. Obviously, a Google-owned property at the top of the, you know, the absolute winners. I think I was talking to Jack about this just before we started recording. We had, interestingly, with this last update, seen some changes with video rankings in Google. Specifically, we had some clients that had YouTube embeds on their pages and they were ranking in normal kind of search result web links for those pages with the videos on. Post this update, we had one of the clients in particular messaged us saying, hey, I've seemed to have lost my ranking for this term in the web links, and what Google had done is decided, I think, that the video was the main part of the content on that page and had kind of stuck them in a little videos panel at the top. But that was a direct link then to YouTube, so no longer going to their site. And funnily enough, we gave them some advice around kind of adding some more details, some more content to the page, and they did manage to reverse that. So I'm interested as to this might be wrapped up in this kind of, this update of what's the main content and actually can I, you know, can we just show the video? I am, as I said, a little bit skeptical because obviously I think it's a fair assumption to say if Google sends someone to YouTube, they're more likely to be able to monetize them further with all the other YouTube videos around than on someone else's website, which is why it gets the flat face from me when I see that at the top of the list.
So yeah, like I said, YouTube at the top there, you've got kind of big names you kind of expect to see. Stuff like Spotify, eBay, the dreaded Quora is in there as well.
Pinterest.
Amazon, Wikipedia. Bloody Pinterest. I think I mentioned Pinterest last time and I had a little mini rant about Pinterest. So go and listen to last month's episode if you want to hear me rant about Pinterest.
We just have a recorded segment rant on Pinterest.
Pinterest. Just
hit play on.
I'll have that little button ready to go next time. We also have the absolute losers as well. Interesting enough, things we see a lot of, to be honest, dictionaries, lots of lyric sites, all that kind of stuff. This comes up over and over again. We've been working with Sistrix for almost a year now, and this is really a pretty much pattern we see with a lot of the Genius lyrics and A to Z lyrics and all that kind of stuff losing a lot. You see azlyrics.com, you see lyrics.com, songsfacts.com there as well. And then Free Dictionary, Wiktionary, and UrbanDictionary.com all taking pretty significant hits there as well.
That said, on that list, I do see Argos, John Lewis, and B&Q all sort of British institutions in a way, you know, very, very well-known chain stores, and all of them have taken fairly significant hits, which is very interesting. I'm sure their teams will be on that.
Definitely. I often use B&Q as a really good example of the transactional informational content combination, that they do this brilliant thing where they combine a lot of the advice and knowledge stuff into this brilliant hub service. And if you have a question about any of their products or services, they pretty much have an answer for you. And I found this out firsthand when I was trying to do some DIY a few months ago. I was like, wow, B&Q has really got it going on. For those of you who don't know, that's DIY.com right down the bottom, just over there. And well, let's talk about the relative loser, shall we, Mark? Because I think you highlighted something we're going to dive into in a sec that I think is particularly interesting.
The other thing on this list, Etsy.com, we previously... spoke many, many, many episodes ago now about Etsy and their extreme long tail targeting.
Yes.
The search pages. I'd be really interested to dig into Etsy actually a bit further and see if there is a specific pattern to where they've lost visibility there.
Yeah. Because you'll also notice that is the highest visibility index of that entire page as well. So Etsy have a lot of stuff going on. I know we dug around the directories again many, many episodes ago, and they pretty much had anything and everything. If you want a purple bat-shaped candle, they had a whole page of purple bat-shaped candles. I'm thinking Halloween, by the way. And it was this whole thing where no matter what you search, there was a landing page for it that was indexable and crawlable and all that kind of stuff. So I'd be very interested to see if they have made any significant changes, or if it's just a factor that Google is kind of maybe moving away from their style of delivery. I don't know. We'll find out. But moving on to the relative losers here. So from the spam and core update, firstly, shout out to Jarrold's, local Norwich company. We work with Jarrold's quite a lot. They're great. Congratulations on your bit of growth there. But right down the bottom there, where we were just talking about with DIY.com, right next to you there, Mark, you've got HuffPost.com just down here. HuffPost.com, you spotted.
Yes.
So has had a little bit of relative growth, right?
Yeah. So the reason I looked at HuffPost was, I think it was Mark Rofe a month or two ago had mentioned on Twitter saying, hey, I don't see Huffington Post as much anymore in SERPs. Has anyone else noticed this? And we looked at some of the visibility and seen it had dropped off. So I thought, they've had some relative growth. Maybe they've recovered. So we saw this and it looks like, hey, yeah, that's maybe like, what, 30, 40% kind of jump there.
So this is visibility index over the last year, by the way. So you see the pretty much a trough in the middle there, but we're on the way back up.
So I thought this, that's great for them. But then obviously I put that back in my mind to what I saw earlier, which is this wider picture.
It's like a 5 years, shall we?
which really shows it's kind of fall from grace. So, you know, HuffPost used to be, I used to see it everywhere around that, I would say 2019, 2020 period. So this is, I think, the danger of maybe just thinking when you are looking at relative data versus absolute, because yes, it's relative to their current position where they were before the update. But in terms of, does Google like their site in any way like it used to? Doesn't look like it.
Yeah, if you go back to 2020, it seems mad that that tiny little tick there just next to the H, which is the G and H little pins there, are the two recent updates we've just been talking about. They are the same B and C ones there on this, and looks like a pretty significant update. And then it's barely, you can almost imperceptibly notice that one in the corner there. It is, I think a good lesson to learn about relying too much on relative data and not looking at the bigger picture. And Systrix, for my money, and I know we're on the show and we're talking about this, but have some of the best historic data for this kind of stuff, and are a really, really good way of looking at the bigger picture for an entire domain and looking back 5 years. And, you know, I recently on the show on Search with Candor, I was talking about the SERP comparison data as well. That's really fantastic as well. And it can highlight stuff like this of how much particular SERPs have changed for domains and for keywords, and see how much they've changed. Speaking of SERPs changing, should we move on and talk about some Discover?
Well, I wanted to mention one other thing, if we've got time.
Absolutely, please just do.
Because I was reading the analysis Steve had written. One thing I wanted to flag was the comment he made about they were seeing quite a lot of directory level changes in the SERPs. And I just think that's quite interesting, because for our site, our kind of play site that we had the drop off for, our death save D&D site, Dr. Marie Haynes was kind enough to have a look at that. She's done a review in her own newsletter. So shout out there. She's got a brilliant newsletter. I think that's going out to her subscribers. Lily Ray had a look at it for us as well, because I was interested in just getting people's different opinions.
Yeah, definitely.
And one thing that Lily in particular mentioned that I thought was interesting was she was talking about patterns of sites and patterns of content. And I've got my own thoughts about this, but it's one thing that resonated with me when I was reading Steve's conclusion. And maybe, and it's a very ham-fisted way to describe what Google's doing, but looking at these kind of patterns of typical content that might be, say, AI generated, or that Google's decided that this pattern is a low quality one, which, because a directory level change is quite extreme.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not going to be as simple as you know, they're obviously not doing it manually because it doesn't scale, of course. And you can't have a simple set of rules. So it implies to me, at least, it's not too much of a stretch to imagine this is around finding patterns. And they've talked a lot about site-wide impact to this algorithm. So it just made me think as well about the type of content we were producing. Although I, hand on heart, do believe it was very good.
Yep. Because we highlighted one in a previous episode, right?
It
was written by neither of us, written by a writer we'd worked with who was legit a topic expert. And we used it as an example of an AI couldn't have written this because it has first-hand experience.
Exactly.
We specifically highlighted the experience, the extra E that's been added to EAT now. Exactly. And felt like it was ticking all the boxes. Like, this is I would use it as like a pillar of, this is a good example of helpful content for people who are looking for this kind of information about Dungeons and Dragons.
100%. And I think it does tick all the boxes. I think, though, the site, because of what it targets, falls into a pattern that is majoritively other, or I should say not other, but spammy sites. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't got the other factors, you know, around like links and authority and brands that could maybe pull out of that.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting thought. There's a few pieces there that are kind of starting to align for me around the HCU and what it might be doing and how it might work and how to help people that have been impacted that didn't deserve it. Most of the examples I've seen of sites that have been impacted did absolutely deserve it, to be fair. Not that they were like mega spammy.
Yeah.
They just weren't very good.
Yeah.
And I think people generally, maybe I am a bit as well, but generally a little bit biased about their own content of, yeah, it's good. And then you look at it, you know, externally, like, it's not that good.
Yeah. So let's talk about some Google Discover, shall we? Something I've talked about with clients quite a lot. But specifically, here's a little update and a screenshot from MS Power User. Shout out to MS Power User for sharing this on Twitter and talking about, this is Discover, but desktop. Oh my God. And a lot of people are kind of hesitant to get excited about this or get interested in this because a lot of people have been comparing it to a lot of other stuff that has come and gone over the decades.
The Google graveyard.
Exactly. Very much the Google graveyard. To put it into perspective, I'll show two clips of my feed for Discover on mobile. So prepare for nerdiness because it's going to be full of gaming stuff.
Yeah, you're exposing yourself here.
I am very much exposing myself, interested in Steam Decks and Fallout and handhelds and Foo Fighters and Assassin's Creed and all that kind of stuff. It's a very Jack Chambers Ward page right there. So this is two separate screenshots I took earlier today, put them side by side. I was like, I'm pretty familiar. I sometimes use Discover. I've used it quite a lot when researching for clients and stuff. I know we've had that discussion with quite a few clients before, but it's quite a different presentation to the desktop version, right? I think this looks a lot more like good old iGoogle from back in the day.
Oh, and the nostalgia.
This is a legit screenshot from like 15 years ago or so of iGoogle. And this is essentially the personalized search homepage that Google introduced that, looks every bit of its age. And now we look at it. And weird enough, something you compared it to, Mark, when we were discussing this earlier, is also the Yahoo homepage from 10 years ago as well, which is also full of like random celebrity trends and dating advice for men and all this other kind of just rubbish that is... I thought we were moving away from like web page clutter, but now we're kind of moving back toward that of like, you want a clean search bar? Tough. You're gonna have to learn about Prime Day deals and stock exchanges and stuff. Oh, thanks. Great. Yeah, I really want to go back to 2010 Yahoo. Thanks, Google.
It does feel like we've come full circle. Because, I mean, that was the thing I tell people, apart from obviously PageRank was a thing Google did right, which is they were trying not to be a portal of everything, and they would just web search. But that said, I mean, I use Google Discover now on my mobile probably more than I use Reddit.
I've been
slowly going off Reddit for all the changes they're making. I'm not a fan. It's just the app's difficult.
Yeah.
The app doesn't work very well.
Yeah. It's forcing people out with all the API stuff. And
But my Discover, so it was actually only this year that I allowed Google to discover, to discover stuff about me, because before I was like, nope, no personalization. And then I thought, yeah, because obviously for work, it's good to know how it works and experience it. And it's been surfacing stuff genuinely I'm really interested in. Yeah. Every day it's got some article about, you know, I've got, you know, very bit like you, specific nerdy interests and then complete disinterest in other stuff that's sometimes quite popular.
Yep.
So it's been working really, really well for me. So I'm kind of like, does it, you know, maybe it is a good idea for desktop, but then again, for me, like desktop is normally about productivity and phone is more about entertainment.
Yeah.
I'm kind of working on my desktop and using my phone to amuse myself. So I don't know if it worked, but
I'm the same way. Yeah, I would agree.
SEO wise, maybe another.
I think a lot of people are talking about this as something. I know a lot of people, specifically, we mentioned Lily Ray earlier. Lily Ray has been brilliant in really using case studies from her clients that she's worked with, looking at what AMCIV have been doing over there with Discover for particular niches and particular industries, and proving that it can work to drive traffic and increase authority and all this kind of stuff that we want to do for our clients, right? But I think so often it's such a fleeting, almost feels like a social media feed sometimes, where you don't really cement yourself into a particular area. You don't get that kind of, oh, we'll rank in position top three, whatever.
It's a crapshoot.
Exactly, yeah. Literally, like the way I did those screenshots, I'll go back to those screenshots again. I refreshed my phone. I literally just pulled it down and refreshed it and got two completely different pages. Notice there is not a single article that is consistent between those two. I know I'm covering one up in the corner here with us up in the corner here, but still, trust me, there is not a consistent article. And they were taken like 2-3 minutes apart as I was screenshotting and kind of sending them over to myself.
I think that's a really good point about Discover, which is that there isn't this like you have with web search, there isn't this set of metrics maybe that make these sites more trustworthy. If you're eligible for Discover, Google just seems to be constantly on the hunt, churning through content to put in Discover. And that's something I've noticed. And you mentioned about Lily Ray giving a lot of advice about Discover. I saw her specifically saying, you know, like, she hasn't cracked it yet. Mm. And they've been studying AMCIV a lot of Discover and doing a lot of work for clients. And I think it's dangerous maybe when someone has some success in Discover and then they anecdotally backtrack and be like, we did these things, therefore these are the things you need to do.
Yeah.
When really it was just, there was 100 people in that race and then, you know, someone's got to win and then they won a couple of times by chance. And then so I do think it's harder to predict. And certainly I wouldn't be guaranteeing any Discover traffic, you know, or forecasting it in any way like we do traditional SERPs.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's something to be interested in, something to look into, something to research. Again, rely on people like Lily Ray, who have been doing this, and her and her team have been doing this for so long. But don't get too excited, right? Don't jump in, oh yeah, I'm going to commit my entire client's budget towards this thing, or I'm going to build an entire site around Discover just because it's coming to desktop. Probably not exactly the right. And also, it's in a very early testing phase. It's currently only available in India. I know a few other people in India on Twitter were verifying it and stuff. And I know a few other people have tried to do it with VPNs, like we've been talking about with SGE and stuff, have been unable to access it. But yeah, in the very, very early stages of testing, by the looks of it, because Google loves to test out in particular markets and see what's going on there. So yeah, Discover probably coming to desktop at some point. And making your SERPs all cluttered and when you come straight to your search page. Let's talk about LinkedIn, shall we? I mentioned social media just now. We'll talk about LinkedIn. It's AI-generated, contributor-led articles.
Collaborative
article. is what they call it. Yeah, I'm not sure it is. But this is kind of what it looks like. If you've never seen it before, this is a genuine article I found on my LinkedIn earlier today. You can literally see my little face in the corner there to prove it's real. What is the best way to identify your SEO competitors? Gives you a little intro and stuff. And it mentions, oh, look, top contributors in the top there. You've got Jeff, Amish, and Connor there. And it mentions, Do you want to contribute, Jack? Hey, start a contribution. Get featured. And you can get that lovely little badge on your profile that says top organic voice or whatever it is, which you get. You can see their little highlight on the right-hand side there. Little yellow button. You
People
get that
love a
on
badge.
Your profile. People love a badge. I have seen endless sharing of like, hey, I'm a top organic search voice. And I think yours was screaming into the void or something like that.
Screaming into the abyss.
Screaming into the abyss. Sorry. But yeah, as you scroll down, it looks like this. You go through different stages. And essentially, it's kind of a big Q&A article, right? So you get questions or you get topics. And at each stage, you get a chance to answer it. Here's some of the answers here. Blah, 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 blah. You can contribute. It says share experience at the top there. Scroll all the way down and you get a way to follow that topic. So they've got like topic clusters in there. You've also got related articles, and you can also rate the article to say it's great or it's not so great. And you can also see other options to contribute there. You can upvote certain things, all that kind of stuff you kind of expect from something like Reddit or Quora or something like that kind of. So it's been an interesting thing. And the reason we brought this up is there's been a lot of shifting in, funnily enough, the visibility index. We've been looking at the data for this, and it's something you highlighted earlier, Mark, looking at the advice directory specifically, which is where the vast majority of these articles sit under, because they seem to be moving towards the pulse thing for LinkedIn, right? But it was previously under the advice directory, and all these articles are still under that directory currently. So we've seen a pretty big shift in the LinkedIn advice side of things.
I mean, they grew super fast, and everyone was like, this is a genius move by LinkedIn. And so I'd point out that you get those little badges basically when it's not the amount of comments you leave or anything like that. It's literally people like liking the contribution yes. that you make. So for instance, I saw Liam Fallon, who is fairly well known in the SEO community for
being a massive troll.
Yeah, just posting memes and stuff. And he had essentially just posted some pretty funny just jokes on the articles, yep. you know, about like DR and stuff. Nothing worthwhile. But because it's funny, lots of people had liked his comments. So he earned this like top voice in organic search badge from essentially just trolling the article, which yep. just demonstrates how worthless these badges are. I'd like to point out, I of course have my worthless badge as well. But you know, when you consider the trade-off as well that LinkedIn is essentially doing, you know, there's lots of talk in the SEO community about, you know, getting paid for your work and doing this, and then LinkedIn has essentially gone, hey, do you want to like contribute expert commentary onto these articles, and in return we'll give you a badge that we made up.
Yep. And they specifically just had, say the word experts as well. If you
yeah, and
that,
they just yeah. had floods of people doing it. So yeah. it's the perfect like ego bait, sucked me right in. I was contributing to, well, my contributions were mainly corrections on the AI content.
I did see that.
It got so much wrong. You know, we've got SEO articles. Obviously, they cover all kinds of topics, but they've got SEO articles talking about bounce rate and rankings and you know, having high spam score links will damage your rankings. Just, you know, complete dross
yeah.
where I've, you know, the comment has been, this is wrong, or, you know, don't worry about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that drop is timed roughly around HCU time.
You can see the pin there from Systrix, the G pin yeah, on the bottom
and this
graph
is,
there.
This is the other bit of the puzzle that fits into my what might be happening here, because we had someone at Search Norwich last week doing a talk and talking about Chrome data specifically. So obviously yes. Google does use some data from Chrome for like the field performance data in GSC. And they were talking about the possibility of Google using some kind of user experience data for websites. Like, are they bouncing off or whatever? And you could maybe see the logic of why they would do that, and they've got enough market share to do it. But what struck me about these particular articles where we've seen this drop is, because lots of people are spending a lot of time on these pages and scrolling around and doing stuff because they're collaborating with them.
Yeah.
That logically would mean, if you use that Chrome data, that the pages look amazing, but they've dropped off.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
makes me fall back to this kind of pattern approach to, again, like be incredibly vague about it. But all of those LinkedIn pages have a definite pattern. And it's, you know, one of the only ways I can think that they're starting to have this impact and be able to flush out those kind of pages, like this kind of combination of, well, nobody's linking to any of these pages.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. They all
fall into this type of pattern of content. Yeah. And if they did their own like LLM style analysis, they'd be able to see that the content produced, obviously, because it's 100% AI before contribution, is very, you know, statistically middle of the road.
Yeah.
Therefore, should we apply this to this whole pattern of content?
I do wonder, like you mentioned in terms of links and stuff, right? Because it's on LinkedIn, I wonder how much of it just doesn't escape that echo chamber. Like people will repost it on LinkedIn, but how often have you shared a LinkedIn post on something that isn't LinkedIn?
Exactly.
So you're kind of building this little isolated thing. And as you said, that means you're not getting links from anywhere else, right? So you're just building this little area of the net that is full of stuff, but LinkedIn is just kind of isolated by itself.
And Google's talked as well recently about hosting, you know, what they called hosting third-party content on your site, you know, to tackle this parasite hosting. Not that that's what this is, but pattern-wise, it probably looks fairly similar in that LinkedIn was this thing, and then suddenly it's got this, like, enormous growth on it on the side that's doing this thing now. So it probably algorithmically looks a bit odd. I'm just interested to see that, you know, it's still a big win for them. Even if they hold that amount of traffic, that's still from basically very little.
Yeah. From literally nothing.
Editorial effort. Yeah, that's still like probably 500,000 visitors a month there. So the drop, I think, is just over 500,000 visitors per month, roughly. So if they could hold that, still a big win. But the content quality, as we've seen, is questionable. So whether people will, after the novelty wears off, whether people will ever read those articles.
Yeah.
Because I've contributed to a bunch, but I've never really read one and been like, that's interesting.
I'll be honest, when I look at that, I was like, oh, so that's what that looks like. I've never actually seen this part of the article before. I've never contributed. I've never read them. I've only seen fellow SEO people like yourself, Mark, contributing to
them. Got to get that badge.
Exactly. Scrambling to get the badge and the little ego boost that comes with it. But I think, it's a weird, because of the isolated nature of it, because everybody is kind of contributing to it, it's a thing we talk about a lot when it comes to, oh, you need an expert to talk about this thing. And it seems like it would be ticking, coming back around to the EAT stuff we always talk about. It's ticking the expertise box. You've literally got the word expert and you're bringing an expert from a particular field to talk about this subject. But you don't have any verification that they are actually experts. There's no way of vetting. It's not like, say, for example, you're working with a client and you know they're a topic expert and you're writing this article and you know they need to go through and vet it. Say you're working in a YMYL situation, right? And you need medical verification or legal verification, whatever it is, and you can verify their qualifications and their previous history of writing clever, authoritative, relevant stuff. I feel like we're just kind of, just chuck it out there and anyone can contribute. Like, you've been working in SEO for 20 years, but somebody who's been in SEO for 3 weeks can also contribute to this article and they're not weighted any differently, right? So you're not really kind of taking the actual expert commentary that we use so often in kind of more traditional content marketing.
The expert commentary is basically that the core content's rubbish.
Yeah.
So from an actual zoomed out point of view, it's like you've produced bad content and you've got expert people telling you it's bad. Like, is that helpful?
No.
Probably not.
No. Again, it's kind of like just this internal smush together, right? You're creating content that other people tell you isn't useful and then it's just kind of feedback looping in on itself. It's weird choice from LinkedIn. But
I think it sounds like a great plan. Yeah, and they must have looked at that first graph and just been like high-fiving, like, we've cracked this. Yeah, and now
they were cracking champagne bottles on like the 15th of September.
And I'm interested to see, maybe in a month's time we'll pick up where it's gone.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about Sesame Street, shall we?
Yeah.
Talk about Bert and Ernie.
Bert and Ernie.
Listeners and viewers out there, I'll let you compare Mark and I to which one is Bert and which one is Ernie. Which one is the like chill, more fun-loving one, and which is the more logical approach of the two of us? I won't make those comparisons. I wouldn't dare. But in all seriousness, this is SEO related, I promise. It's not just me talking about Sesame Street, which apparently was the one thing that could get me to eat my lunch as a kid. 30 years ago, despite my size now as a 33-year-old, apparently I was refusing to eat lunch and my mum would go, I'll turn off Sesame Street if you don't finish your lunch.
Oh.
Finish those carrot sticks or I'm turning off Sesame Street. And I was obsessed. So this is a huge part of my childhood. It's nice to finally open up and be honest about it and like make a confession about my love of Bert and Ernie. But in all seriousness, it is actually related to Baidu, of all things, something we don't really talk about that much on Search with Kanda or Search with Kanda, really, because it's not really a thing I know much about. It doesn't seem to be a thing much people want to talk about, but Baidu want to talk about themselves, essentially, and say, yeah, we've got a competitor to GPT-4. We've got Ernie 4.0. Okay, right. So is it a competitor to Bard? Then
Bert?
Yeah, to Bert. So is it Bert or Bard? Because you're riffing
oh,
on...
Oh, Bard. I thought you said Bart.
Well, that's okay. It, right?
Bard,
they're
Bert,
riffing on the Bert side of things.
Yes.
But this is not what this is, sort of. So what? Like, this is not you trying to make your own version of Bert. It's closer to GPT-4 and the kind of LLMs like Bard rather than Bert. But they've gone with Ernie to clearly play on the Bert and Ernie thing. Like, have you thought for 5 seconds about this and worked out that you're not making a Bert, you're making a Bard? Like,
yeah, the acronym Ernie,
oh God,
stands for Enhanced E Representation.
So far, so
R,
good. Uh-huh.
Yeah. From, okay, yeah, fine.
Fair enough.
Knowledge, that, capital
that,
N.
That famous word that begins with N.
I mean, can kind of give them that because the K is sort of silent. And then we need an IE. Integration with the I and then the E.
Integration.
Integration. I mean, they clearly had decided on the name and worked backwards.
Yeah. I think they had come up with, oh yeah, we're going to do Ernie, and then been like, oh, it's kind of more like Bard, but we've already been...
We've committed.
We're kind of committed now.
We've bought all the dolls.
What does it stand for? I don't know, like enhanced representation. Knowledge starts with an N, right? We'll be fine. That's an N. We'll be fine. Oh my God. Yeah, it's a whole thing. Before we get into talking about Bert and Ernie, I would like to give a special shout out to our head of SEO here at Kanda. One Mr. Brendan Bennett, who I know hasn't been on the show, but I've talked about a lot on the show before, who predicted this, kind of, whatever the opposite of a prediction is, I guess. He predicted it wouldn't happen in his exact words. Sadly, the chances of seeing an update with an Ernie acronym are slim to none.
Oh, that came home to roost, didn't it? Yeah. Three egg on his face now.
3 years ago, Brendan predicted that no one would dare to come up with Ernie. And he's technically right, because that acronym is such a stretch.
Yeah.
I don't think I count that as Ernie, because you're using one word for two of the letters and the other letter is also wrong. So more than half of the letters in the acronym are wrong. I think Brendan's right in the end of it.
So let's talk about the technology.
Yeah.
So Ernie is another type of generative AI. It sort of does do a bit of what Bert does in terms of it's around understanding queries, because it's all around natural language, but the bigger side is more like GPT-4. And it's actually a product that Baidu are integrating in several of their different services. For instance, they're using it for their Maps product and allowing users to get directions and use their Maps product basically with natural language.
Yeah.
Which I think's super interesting. You know, apart from content generation usages for stuff like GPT-4, I think one of the biggest things holding back sort of search engines and how useful they are on people is literally the interface we've got with them, that search terms are really low fidelity for getting across what you actually want. And search engines have got better at it. And I did a talk, like, I think it was 2018, 2017, maybe, about the future of search and doing some crystal ball gazing. And at the time I was saying, we'll probably see more interactions with search engines through intelligent personal assistants. Basically, you know, that was the time when we had loads of the Alexa stuff coming out and it was just really bad. You'd like tell it 10 times to set an alarm. And I'm like, I can kind of see this working if it understood what I said, but then anything beyond a, you know, single instruction, it just couldn't handle.
Yeah.
But if we can get these conversational agents that understand nuance and can understand the, you know, fidelity of what you're trying to communicate, like you are with another human, and pass that successfully to a search engine, or even, like, you know, we're saying here, Baidu, like a maps product.
Yeah.
To me, that is the natural progression of search. That's the Star Trek computer of just being able to say, this is exactly what I want to know. Here's the context, the nuance, and all of that that sometimes is non-spoken, but the system knows about you.
Yeah.
So I think that, to me, that's why this is interesting, because it's now just everyone seems to be chucking their chips into the, okay, let's push technology this way. And I'm sure you've got a lot to say about, you know, technology we see in films sometimes does predict what people dream about and end up making.
Very
right?
much so. Yeah, yeah. Star Trek is the perfect example, yeah. pretty much. You know, everything from flip phones to iPads to yeah. anything and everything, pretty much Star Trek predicted in the 60s, coming through to Next Generation in the 80s and everything in between. And I think it's a really interesting thing where they specifically mention maps. They specifically mention a few of the different services. They mention things like solving complicated maths problems. I'm like, okay, cool. Who cares about that kind of stuff? But creating plots for novels from scratch, I'm like, okay, sure, yeah, fair enough. And then mentioning generating car commercials within minutes. I know that's something a lot of people have been using, a lot of AI stuff when it comes to ad writing and ad copy. We did an example, again, many, many episodes ago with a terrible voiceover done by AI, which was a Sony advert, which was unbearably bad.
We've got the voice cloning now, though. We'll have to demo that on the show. We've been cloning people's voices for a laugh. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, and making you speak Spanish or French or Arabic or whatever it is, like any language you want, and voice cloning and stuff. The technology's come a long way in like 6 months, which is kind of terrifying. But yeah, I think this is interesting, especially for people who are into Baidu. I know there are a few experts out there that do talk about Baidu a lot. Obviously, this is specifically focusing on the Mandarin Chinese market, because Baidu is in Mandarin Chinese. So if you're not working in Baidu and stuff, I think it's still worth paying attention to what they're doing. Something we say a lot with things like Bing is they will do cool experimental stuff, and then Google might do something similar. So if you are still just focusing on Google and kind of the more Western European kind of search engines and English language search engines, it's still worth having a look at what Baidu is doing, because first of all, the Chinese tech market is completely different to how we handle stuff here in the UK and the US and parts of Europe. And I think it's still really interesting from a technological point of view of what they're capable of doing, because they have a lot of money behind them. And even in terms of, you know, talking about market share and stuff, their earnings and stuff do not necessarily reflect the fact that they are so small in the grand scheme of things, because China itself is such a huge market and such a huge percentage of the global population is in one country, essentially, that this search engine is serving. So I think a lot of people might look at this and go, ah, yeah, Baidu, whatever, I don't need to worry about it. But I think it is actually something worth mentioning. And the reason we brought it on the show, I think, is because it doesn't get talked about a lot, but they are doing stuff that is interesting and could potentially rival things like BERT and Bard and GPT-4.
I mean, to prove that, last year in February we spoke about Bing's car marketplace as a new feature, and Google's just releasing their own version like this month, so it definitely happens.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that is pretty much us for this month's episode of Systrix with Kanda. Thank you for joining me, Mark. It's been a lot of fun talking about LinkedIn, Baidu, and everything in between. Please do subscribe, please do like the video. Give us some comments if you have any thoughts on any of the topics we talked about. Post them in the comments down below. If you want to get this in audio format, you can search for Search with Kanda on your podcast app of choice. Not Google Podcasts.
Oh.
It's dead. It's gone. Go search YouTube Music. We're on there. Go and find that instead. It's a real thing, I promise. You're on YouTube right now. You can search YouTube Music and find us on there. Spotify, all the usual places. You can find us there every single week in between these monthly episodes of the video show. Until then, thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next month.
Bye.